Welcome to the FirstGroup preliminary results for the year to 31st of March 2013.
Short notice. Our friends in the Fourth Estate decided to move us along on our schedule, so we thought we would follow their lead. I'm joined here by Chris Church, our Finance Director, and Rachel Borthwick, our Director of Communications. This really is a decisive moment for FirstGroup. It's a time for me of greater clarity and confidence than I've had in all the time I've been here. In fact, I would have to say in the years before that. Because in one fell swoop, we are going to remove the specter from the balance sheet that has haunted this company since 2007, and that has created the uncertainty that we could face our challenges and still deliver our promises. I believe the shareholders will grasp this vision of cutting to the chase and creating a company that can grow from a position of strength, that can evaluate its portfolio from a position of strength, and can deal with change from a position of strength. As you might imagine, we have consulted with most of our major shareholders, talked through this proposition, and after giving them time to reflect, I'm quite encouraged by the support we've gotten from them. We've laid the conditions for that support and our performance. Chris will take you through the numbers, but the performance is meeting expectations. The two big bus companies and their recovery programs, U.K. Bus and First Student, are on plan, delivering us the change we're looking for. In fact, when it comes to U.K. Bus, which is the farthest to go, I'm quite encouraged that some of the experiments on the commercial side, which I didn't expect to see coming through so quickly, are already showing signs of improvement, and I'll talk about that. Our Greyhound business is continuing to roll out successfully the growth in Greyhound Express and in Bolt Bus. Even in the core business, it's demonstrating its ability to flex with the downdraft in revenues with the economy and still improve margins. Our rail and our transit business just continue to reliably deliver the numbers they promised at the beginning of the year. We have also completed the non-core asset sales we said we would. Chris will talk to you about the impact of the fact that we allowed the closing on the London bus depots to occur after year-end, but we did warn that we might do that to avoid doing a bad deal. We also closed on the sale of our military support unit in transit, so I'll not have to talk to you any longer about the onerous contract in Diego Garcia. I have to tell you, I'm very pleased to be at this point, especially with U.K. Bus, to draw a line under this, because these kinds of programs can be very distracting, even for employees who are unaffected. Because it's unavoidable that people talk about what's next, who's next. This allows us to interact, to bring together our employees in U.K. Bus even more effectively to enlist their support and work in our transformation program. Now, I hope you don't fault me for burying the headline and talking about our proposed rights issue. But you cannot bring a proposal like this to your shareholders unless you have the performance and unless you can show that you do what you told them you would do. Now, Chris will take you through the numbers, but I just want to explain why now and why this solution, and to set the context. So this company, as I've said, has labored under the burden of the debt that it contracted in order to buy Laidlaw in 2007, which it paid $3.5 billion for. Since that time, given the economic challenges it's faced, the company's had to aggressively manage cash while paying down about 660 million pounds of that debt. Now, with the weakness in our two big bus companies, for the reasons we've talked about before, rail refranchising had to play a much more prominent role in determining the trajectory for further debt repayments going forward. This was the operational response to this challenge. It still would have been a close-run thing, and it still would have meant struggle for a couple of years. And at what point in that struggle you all would have acknowledged the trajectory of return and to revalue this company, it's hard to say. But the one thing we have seen, and as events have unfolded, with the elongation of the refranchising schedule, it means that that path would be far, far longer. Now, at the same time we were confronting that change, we had this obligation previously expressed to come to you with an explanation of what we were doing with shareholder payout. As you well know, this company had the somewhat unusual policy of a commitment to 3 years of 10% increases in dividends, followed by another commitment for 3 years of 7% increases in dividends. And these dividend increases had grown disconnected from the actual financial results. So in determining how we should deal with this change, especially the changes presented by rail refranchising scheduling, the first place the board went was to consider the change in the dividend. And Chris will take you through the new dividend policy. But in short, it is to rebase the whole approach, to still aspire to a progressive dividend policy, but one that is tied more directly to our results. The next thing the board looked at in assessing this situation is whether we should revisit the credit profile of this company. You know, even after taking on the huge debt at Laidlaw, it's been the stated policy of this company to aspire to a return to a triple B flat rating, that's where the efficient point on the curve is for a company of this kind. But we had to ask the question, well, maybe that isn't the right answer now. That isn't the right answer given what we're facing. So we did a lot of analysis on whether we should allow this company to operate at a lower credit rating, to take it down to sub-investment grade as the efficient solution. But as we analyzed the increase in interest costs, the effects on our pension obligations, we determined that it does not offer the return to shareholders that continuing to see the plan through in our current posture takes. The next thing we looked at as a board was whether we should turn to an idea that many of you have raised in the past, and that is the sale of one or more of our divisions in order to change the capital structure of this business. I mean, after all, the conventional wisdom was that Greyhound was to be flipped almost contemporaneous with the Laidlaw purchase at that time. So we did analyze this in some detail using a lot of outside resources. But after all the analysis we did, the conclusion is really the same one I delivered an answer to a question last year at this time, and that it simply does not address the issue. It does not address our credit profile, and it leaves the shareholders in a worse position. So we also looked at all sorts of other possible capital market solutions. We looked at demergers. We looked at issuing hybrids, all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, none of them really dealt with the fundamental challenges we're facing, and none produced as positive a return as the one we're turning to here, which is an equity raise that underpins the balance sheet and allows us to grow this company and allows us to restore this company to the profile it should have, which is a company with a value commensurate with its size, generating consistent returns, and generating cash consistently. And it's that confidence that will also allow us to announce this $1.6 billion capital program, which we'll be spending over the next 4 years to drive growth, margins, and returns. As we go through the discussions of the divisions, both Chris and I, we will talk about how we're spending this money, you know, what developments we see in the various businesses. So with that, I'll draw my remarks to a close and turn it over to Chris. But I just would like to add the final thought that my first 2 years here have been a heavy slog, through dealing with a lot of economic challenge and uncovering a lot of frailty in the company. To be at this point, to finally have clarity, finally have confidence going forward is really a fantastic position. With that, I'll turn it over to Chris.
Thanks, Tim. Okay, good morning, everybody. Thanks, Tim. I'm going to cover... take us through the 12-13 results and try and give you some color and the key themes, the capital structure, and take you through the details of the rights issue and the dividend policy, and then also look at our medium-term objectives. But just before I get into that, an overview. We were very pleased with the results for 12/13. Bang in line with what we guided as the pre-close and with our expectations. That was despite some really tough economic headwinds throughout the whole year. Then in the run-up to the year-end, the really unusual, although today doesn't feel any different, weather conditions, certainly at the end of February and through March. We got there, and as I say, we're very pleased with that performance. Despite those macroeconomic headwinds, we have been increasing the rate of investment by around 10% during the year. On the balance sheet, the headroom on our covenants, our liquidity, and I'll give you the details as I get into the presentation, was clearly good. Our cash flow, as Tim has said, when you take account of the London disposals, was essentially flat. The key issue, the news for today, is obviously the rights issue. Having fixed the capital structure with investment-grade status, it really does allow us to drive forward with the transformation process. If I now take you through the numbers, overall sales of 6.9 billion pounds. You'll remember in the preceding year to this, there was an extra week. If we adjust for that, so on an underlying basis, revenue grew by 4.5%. In this presentation, I've done the same as last time, which is to put a number of bridges in there, which I hope helps you understand the underlying numbers. This one, you can see the impact within bus of the increased cost pressures from pension, fuel, and the reduction in the government subsidies, and also within rail as we moved into the extension period within TPE, both of those of which were announced more than a year ago. You can also see from this table the increase in margins, both in student and in Greyhound, which, as Tim said, is just demonstrating that the change process that we've got in the businesses is delivering. The transit numbers are slightly lower or negative. That's because of the one-off legal claim, which we've talked about before. Outside of that, this business is performing very, very strongly. If I now go into the individual businesses, so first of all, student, the model is working. Overall sales are down 2.8%, partly driven by clearly the storm. In terms of contracts, we are exactly where we expected to be on the 90% retention. Again, we've talked about before, we would generally make some of that up through infill acquisitions, but we've not been pursuing that, especially at a time that some of the prices being demanded by potential sellers have been, should we say, optimistic. We are actually seeing more realistic opportunities out there at the moment, so we'll see how that develops. Also our discipline and focus on when we're bidding for these contracts on improving the rates of return on our capital employed. We're only bidding where we can actually bid at or above our cost of capital and actually walking away from contracts where we can't achieve that. We're being very, very disciplined, and that's also had an impact here. As I said earlier, the margins are improving, as you can see from the chart at the top. Had it not been for Sandy, that margin increase would have been even higher. As you see from the chart, our program to take out $100 million of cost savings is well on track and will be at that run rate early in 2013-2014. In transit, this is really a solid business. It does perform. You can see the growth rate there, 7.7% on revenue, and underlying margins have been retained at 7.6% when you adjust for the military business in last year's numbers. Really a solid performer. Greyhound's also working. Despite some really tough economic conditions, particularly in the second half, you can see from the chart that we have improved the margins. We are getting particular growth in the newer services, Greyhound Express, Bolt Bus, Yeo, Tim will come back to this, that's offset the impacts of that sluggish environment on the more traditional business. In Canada, where we completed the regulatory reform, but right at the end of the year, we'll now be able to implement that more flexible model that we've got in the U.S. and improve the performance there. And the point at the bottom, which Tim will come back to, is Greyhound Express is actually going very, very well. UK Bus, I've talked about the lower margins already. We are seeing some good early signs, and actually the uptick in the growth rates in the final quarter of the year, particularly in the north, where we're focusing our efforts at the moment, was very, very pleasing. And as I say, Tim will come back to this one in more detail. And in rail, just like transit, real solid performer, growth up by north of 7% and underpinned by very strong passenger growth. Quick word on exceptional items. The number's quite large, but they are essentially non-cash items and principally relate to asset write-downs, goodwill, property impairments on the assets that we've disposed of. It is a vagary of accounting rules that the profit on the disposal of London, which will offset some of the write-down of the assets here, will be booked in 13-14. Just touch on the claims for old legal issues. This is claims that go back many, many years to around the Laidlaw days. And although we'll be fighting these claims very rigorously, we thought it prudent to provide for those. On cash, obviously, I have all the details in the announcement of the cash flows, but that shows the key elements. The key point to make from here is no surprises. That was exactly what we expected. And you can see from the note at the bottom that when you take account of the London disposal, where the proceeds will come in probably around June or July, once we get TfL clearance, essentially the profit was flat for the year. Turning now to capital structure, the debt at the end of the year was just a tad shy of $2 billion, which gives us a leverage ratio of 3x. The main reason for the increase over last year was, again, we come back to the timing of the London disposals, but also with the strengthening of the dollar right towards the end of the year, that had an impact on our net debt. Our liquidity, as I said earlier, is very strong. You can see there $1.2 billion, and even after we paid down the bond in April, it's just short of $1 billion. And our EBITDA headroom on the RCF is also strong at $126 million. And the average age of our debt profile remains good at north of 5 years. Clearly, with what's announced today, the balance sheet takes on a very different shape, and in our view, a stronger one. In simple terms, I think we've fixed the problem. Our leverage comes down to 2.3 times post IAS 19. And as we improve the business, it will then get into the range of 2 to 2.2 times, which we've previously indicated. But it reinforces the whole strength of the balance sheet, including investment grade status. With the $600 million, and it is a mathematical formula, we get to the magic 25% FFO to net debt ratio by March 15, which is the requirement. So we've secured our investment grade status. But as I mentioned, and we will reiterate, I'm sure, this just puts us in a great position to allow us to focus on the transformation program rather than the balance sheet. I won't go through all of these. But you've got the details of the rights issue, 3-for-2 at 85p. What you've also got set out is the timetable. Clearly, this will require shareholder approval, and the EGM is set for the 10th of June. Turning now to our medium-term objectives. Three elements to this. First of all, the top-line revenue, excluding rail, which will be determined by the franchising process. Based upon the plans and the programs that we have, we will grow revenue at a higher rate than the underlying economies that we serve. All of our divisions will contribute to the increase in profit, but certainly a key element is turning around the two bus businesses. So we're reiterating we will get to double digit within student, and within bus we will also get to double digit, but on a post-IAS 19 basis. And for those who don't know, The 12-13 number on a post-IAS 19 basis is a tad shy short of 5%. So it shows you how we will improve that business. The key metric, though, is the focus on return on capital employed. And through our focus on returns and disciplined capital allocation, we will drive that up from the current 8% to in the range of 10 to 12%. And you will see from those targets that that will drive a very significant recovery in EPS. And then following that, this business will return to what I would call a normal business of this type, generating good, consistent, stable cash. And that's where we will be in due course. I've talked about the leverage covenants previously. On dividend policy, the board do recognize just how important dividend returns are as part of the equity returns to many of our shareholders. But given the equity raise, we will not be proposing a final dividend for 12-13, nor an interim dividend for 13-14. But we will be proposing a dividend of up to £50 million as a final dividend for 13-14. Clearly, that depends upon performance. And then beyond that, we will have a dividend policy that is reflective of performance on a cover ratio basis of 2 to 2.5 times. And clearly, as the business turns and the EPS grows, that will be a progressive policy. So in summary, we are where we wanted to be. We are where we expected to be. The business is performing. The results do demonstrate that the transformation program is working. Still an awful lot to do, but it is working. Clearly, there remains short-term caution, but we're very confident in the medium-term objectives, and the rights issue fixes the capital structure. Jim.
So now I'll do as we always do, go through each of the divisions and talk about, give some kind of qualitative assessment of where we're headed. I won't try not to be repetitive with the comments Chris has already made. So once, you know, the $100 million on plan and all the rest of it, I'd say the headline is the guidance we gave at the half year is still, I think, accurate. That is, the bidding environment is more rational and we're not facing kind of the craziness we face in the worst of times. We did see some very modest, well, tiny really, organic growth. The only reason to note it, it's the first time we saw any in 4 years. The thing I'm proud of is the fact that for the fourth year in a row, our client satisfaction scores have improved and hit all-time highs. And at the same time, we've posted the best safety performance we've ever posted. And I'd say what's important and why I would make those observations is I remember during the worst of the times 2 years ago, there was a suggestion in this room that maybe our problem was that relationships with our clients had broken down, that its service quality was an issue for first. I think these results, our client satisfaction scores prove that wasn't the case, but in any event, it certainly is never not going to be a concern of the future. And the reason I point to the safety results is this, having been in the transportation business for 30 years, it is an inevitable correlation. Where you have improving safety numbers, you have improving operational performance. As far as the delivering this program, it just continues to be a grind, quite frankly. There is no big step change. It is just about taking this first student way and forcing it across all 600 locations every single day. And it isn't adhered to everywhere all the time. This is something there's still a lot to play for, but there isn't a step change. We just have to do this the hard way. And accordingly, as we think about the capital program going forward, this business, which requires a lot of capital just to stand in place, probably about $150 million a year or so in new buses, we're going to be holding this around the maintenance level as we watch this market hopefully settle out. We are not going to be just grabbing for volume. As Chris said, you know, return on capital employed is something that will be very front of mind for us. We do have some money in the program, especially in later years, on the assumption that there will be opportunities to have bolt-on acquisitions, but we're going to be very, very disciplined. And you've seen that in the way we've tightened up the portfolio. I mean, I look at the portfolio now, and there are still probably 5% of the contracts that no amount of efficiencies that we put into this business are going to make remunerative. Some of that comes from contracts in New Jersey where you have to bid by route, and those are just one-year contracts, so they'll just fall off. It's very hard to do that and get it right all the time because at a depot you're assembling service to multiple schools, and we don't get that right all the time. But there are also some big contracts that, you know, we have to walk away from because if they're not making money, it's up or out. So, for example, you saw we gave back, walked away from the Boston contract because, you know, that was a money-losing one for years and years and years. It wasn't taken even by one of our traditional competitors. We have a new entrant, Veolia, who took it, so we'll be interested to watch how that goes. We've also recently turned back about 250 routes in Columbus, Ohio, on a contract that was, we just couldn't make money. We told the school district, look, we're going to have to increase the payments on this business or we can't do it. What's fascinating is that there was no other bidder willing to step in, which tells you something about that contract. We know the school district can't deliver that service as efficiently as we can, so we think that that business will reappear. But the point is, we are going to be continue to be quite disciplined about our portfolio, making sure that everything is a contributor as we go forward. And we just feel that continuing to take this consistent approach is the only way forward for this business. Turning to First Transit, this is really the star of the group. This is the perfect transportation company in that it just continues to deliver. It gives you the numbers it promises at the beginning of the year. You know, you'll note a lot of commentators who will, or other companies who talked about their coming into this business, and they're serious companies, so we take that competition very seriously. But I would urge you to keep the numbers in perspective. We're talking about 340 contracts across North America in this business. The secret to this business, as I think I've mentioned before, is you have to be bidding all the time. And you're bidding in different circumstances, different local requirements. You have to be able to analyze the geography of delivering one of these services and put in bids relatively quickly and efficiently without blowing your brains out. That's what these people can do. That's the competitive advantage. This team has proven that they know how to do this, and they're kind of trying to increase the distance between themselves and the rest of the industry by developing some new IT products for the customer, which we think are going to give complete transparency into our operations. We will be the company they can trust more than any other because we have so much confidence in the way we do this. We are happy for the clients to be able to see exactly what's going on. The other big change in this business is this is a low capital business, as you know, but an area where we are the leader and we want to push that lead even further is in the shuttle area because shuttle's different from para and fixed route in that you have to deliver the buses. So we have just been cleaning up, picking up all these contracts on university campuses. We continue to grow the business in Fort McMurray, the Canadian oil sands fields. And so we expect to continue to spend money through this plan period on buses for shuttle. So what does that mean? So we're spending maintenance capital in this business of around $17, $18 million. You can double that to support the shuttle business going forward. It's going to be a similar magnitude of spend, we think, through the 4 years. But we're very excited about this business and about the consistency this team is able to show. Greyhound is facing some difficult times in some of its markets. You know, we all talk about the macroeconomic indicators showing, you know, more positive economy in the U.S. But for some of the markets that Greyhound serves, it doesn't look that way. I mean, the combination of the payroll tax increase, some of the cutbacks and sequestration really hits a lot of our passengers. And given that a lot of the trips are made within, the decision to travel is within 2 days of actually making the trips, tells you a lot of this is discretionary. And we're seeing in that 400-800-mile segment of core Greyhound a real reduction in the business. And a lot of these routes, we don't have much competition other than the cars. So this is people just not traveling in what are more difficult times for them. But what is really great is this management team continues to prove that they really did transform this business coming out of 2008. They've been able to flex their cost structure in light of that. And in the face of these disappointing revenues, they've delivered an increase in margin. So it really is an impressive performance they've put in. As Chris mentioned, in the niche areas of Greyhound Express and YoBus and BoltBus, we continue to grow. He mentioned a 10% figure, but in the second half of the year, they grew at 12%, that collection of buses. So YoBus is the new bus product that we wheeled out to serve the Chinatown markets on the East Coast. It has had a great reception. BoltBus, we moved to the Pacific Northwest. Remember, I think I mentioned to you last time, we're using this as a product to take on Amtrak. It's got such a high positive profile that we think it's the best one to dislodge users of the train, as it's done on the East Coast. So we've moved that up against Amtrak on its Cascades route in the Pacific Northwest, big success. And Greyhound Express, we continue to roll out across the country. It's been a real success story. As far as spending going forward, so capital and Greyhound around the $75 million mark. As you know, we've always required Greyhound to be cash generative. See the spending closer to $95 million going forward. That's new buses primarily, but it's also we're spending money on a new IT system. So in the past year, we picked up almost 50 buses out of Coach USA so we could get rid of some older buses that didn't have wheelchair accessibility, which is a new federal requirement in the United States. And we put in the largest new bus order in Greyhound's recent history of 220 new buses. But the real story in Greyhound is the one we've talked about in the past, and it's the investment we're putting into the IT system, which takes this proprietary trip system that Greyhound enjoys so that it's the only bus system that can sell trips from anywhere to anywhere in the United States, and turns it into the yield management system that we've proved works on Greyhound Express and BoltBus. And, you know, people throw around the word transformation. This truly is a transformation. This will create a completely new commercial proposition, and we're very excited that we have clarity that this business is going to have the resources to complete that transformation. UK Bus, you know, I suppose the good news is all the tough headlines are out and past, and we are moving forward with turning this business around in its recovery. One of the things I find so encouraging in the second half of the year is the operational performance is turning. Remember, we talked about we had to return, you know, bring operational discipline back into this business in a way that had been allowed to slip. Well, the fact of the matter is, when you go into these businesses, I don't care whether it's a rail system or it's a bus system, and you start to fix things, what actually happens is things get a little worse in your numbers. And it's very depressing. And that happens, as you can imagine, because you're changing things, and you're making people do new things. And when you see that, you just have to have the conviction to keep going. What we've seen in the second half is exactly what we would have expected to see. And, you know, the shareholders are always saying to me, "You know, where is this? Where's the evidence that the change is happening?" Well, we now see it in all of those regions which have been through a depot transformation. So lost mileage is coming down, complaints are down, engineering breakdowns are down. What it means is that we're able to put out a reliable product in a way we haven't in the past. And so to finally see those indicators moving shows we have a team that can drive this level of change. The other thing that is encouraging is that I alluded to this in my introduction. On the commercial side, we're actually seeing in some of our pilots the kind of change we had hoped, and I didn't think we would see so quickly. So, for example, in the north part of our operation, which, as you know, is the heart of where we get our profitability, we were very focused on whether we could make this transformation from a high fare environment to a more compelling fares, being rewarded with greater volumes. So we put in some bolder fare changes in South Yorkshire. We've done the same thing in Manchester. In South Yorkshire, we saw a 12% increase in volume. Manchester, we've seen a 6% increase in volume. It's happened exactly as we'd hoped. And while the profitability hasn't increased, what has happened is it hasn't gone down. So it means we can change that position where now you're in a place where you can move forward with the competition, and you can start to manage the networks more dynamically. What's so encouraging is to know when we do this, we will be rewarded. So we've completely redesigned the network in Glasgow. We're in the tail end of the consultation of this thing called Simplicity, where we've restored all the core high-frequency routes that were there years ago and had been taken away. And we're convinced that this will put us in a position of really welcome dominance in that market, where we're giving that city the service and the fare packages it's looking forward to. So we're, not celebrating victory. This is the low point for UK Bus. But I have to tell you, I genuinely have more confidence and absolute certainty on where we're headed. My only concern in this business, other than speed and execution, is government policy. You've heard what other big bus operators have said. Martin Griffiths at Stagecoach, we join that chorus. We couldn't agree more. The bus industry has already paid into the austerity bucket. The government has to keep their eye on the ball here. Two-thirds of the people in this country who use public transport use a bus. That's what they use. So it's all well and good, all this money going into rail, and it is needed, and it is good investment, but this is how most people get around. And if the government chokes off the ability of that part of society to get to work, to get to shopping, to get to education, there is no way this government austerity program will have sufficient demand to do anything but fail. The government has to be very alive to this. This is one of the most important engines for all of society to move forward. And so we will continue to emphasize this point to make government do the right thing. If they do the right thing, I'm completely comfortable that we will deliver the plan that I'm promising you. And finally, UK Rail, the headlines are past. We are just getting on with it. Our performance is quite strong right now, other than some infrastructure issues. We have had some overhead line problems on First Capital Connect. But for the most part, still strong performance. And when you think about this is, this winding down of these franchises, we're still delivering growth rates in excess of 7%. I mean, there are some other prominent rail companies who won't be able to tell you that. We are also proving out that we are the right partner for alliances, which are all the rage these days. Well, it's our alliance, which is the first one that's actually delivered real money on a real project. So we delivered on ScotRail in partnership with Network Rail, the Paisley Canal electrification at less than 50% of the original estimated cost and way ahead of schedule. And we did that really to demonstrate to the Scottish government what we could do in partnership together. And we're taking that forward, and we're quite proud of what we're able to deliver in this area. We have kept our bid teams in place, so we are more than ready to participate in the coming bid competitions. And the last point I would make on rail really leads me to my closing remarks, and that is because we now approach it from a position of strength, the suspicions that some had, which were unfair in my opinion, but had, that we would be bidding out of desperation, you can forget about it, because this is a very different company going forward. We have in the past not done as well as many of our competitors in some of our businesses, and we have not responded as we would have liked to have to some of our challenges. But that recent past obscures real strength in this business. And I think that the challenge of government austerity more recently obscures the real arc for this industry. And it's why this is our vision, because we think, and I've said this before, that the unrelenting move worldwide and in this country and in North America, urbanization means the only thing any of us knows for sure about the future is that congestion will be part of it. And companies like this one, that is companies with a solid market presence, with a wide capability in its management, really have a bright future. And we think that the fact that our shareholders share this vision and puts us in a position to realize that future is enormously encouraging and gives us the confidence to execute. And so with that, Chris and I would be happy to take your questions. Let's go.
Yeah. Got a lot of hands.
Morning. Morning, it's Jamie Robotham from Morgan Stanley. Three quick questions, please, guys. Firstly, Chris, as we think about the potential interest cost saving that might come from the rights issue, how much debt is there that you can actually pay down immediately, given you obviously just paid down another bond, meaning I think the bulk of your debt is in long-dated bonds at the moment. If you could give us a steer on that, please. Secondly, when you return to paying a dividend, you've talked about this 2 to 2.5 times cover. Will that be based on earnings or some sort of cash measure, given how prudently the P&L is going to account for pensions under IAS 19? And will that be based on ex-rail profits and or cash or total group profit? And finally, UK Bus, you just explained that the IAS 19 adjusted margin for regional buses 5% and the aim is to get to 10 in the next 2 to 4 years. Is there any improvement there that's already in the bag from actions you've taken in the latter parts of fiscal 13, or is it all still to do? And if you could remind us of the key building blocks there, how much is perhaps to come from cost as well as growing revenues above UK growth? As you mentioned on the slide. Thanks.
Okay, let me start with the debt question. Yes, you're absolutely right. It would be very costly to pay down our long-term bonds. So the focus will be paying down the bilaterals, which will be around 300, 350 million is what we will pay down. So in a full year, we would expect the cost savings to be of the order of 15 million. But again, I emphasize the key reason for doing this is to give us a platform to grow the business. We didn't do it to save interest costs. It's more about the ability to gain real EPS momentum from the turnaround program. Okay, on dividends, yeah, the 2 to 2.5 times range is based upon post IAS 19 earnings, and including rail, although obviously clearly in the shorter term, while we're in the extension periods, the rail impact is less. Now, as we go forward, we look at that. That's the base. Clearly, we will look at what the overall cash position is of the business and take sensible decisions. But this gives us the firepower to make the right decisions going forward. So we think we need a simple policy, one that's flexible, dependent upon the results, and we believe that this does it. To the bus, what do you want to do?
Well, as far as the bus goes, I mean, I suppose the one part that is an impact is the sales, as we said before. That naturally helps it, especially since our margins in London were worse than they were anywhere else, with the exception of the money-losing operations. But as far as where we get the improvement from, it's both. It's a real mix. It's as much cost as it is revenue. One of the upsides of putting appropriate investment into that business is you really have a dramatic impact on your engineering costs. I mean, it has been something of nightmare is too strong a word, but a real challenge in a lot of these depots with old buses and what they have to do every day and the constant repairs and repairing the same bus over and over again. And so being able to put new modern equipment in there can have a dramatic impact, as well as just running the engineering operation much more efficiently, following the template that we worked out in first student, quite frankly. There's been a lot of cross-learning between the two groups.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the questions. It's Alex Brignall from UBS. Three, if I may, please. Firstly, in terms of the disposal target, the 100 million that you say you've achieved, I think last year you talked about 100 million with no impact on EBIT, so therefore we would see a margin improvement. Obviously, we have seen an impact on EBIT. Does that mean that there's still a tail of non-profitable businesses that you're trying to get out of, or is what you have left what you're planning on keeping? Secondly, in terms of student, with regards to 5% of revenues that you could maybe lose, could you give us a feel for where your revenue growth might be given the margin target? Is there stuff that you'll be rolling off, and therefore what's the organic and total revenue growth there? And then thirdly, you briefly touched on changes you're making in Glasgow. I guess if you give us some more granularity on the reasoning behind that. Obviously, it's an extremely competitive market. So what plans do you have and why you think you'll be able to be profitable in that business given the level of competition? That would be really appreciated. Thank you very much.
Well, in the disposals, there are some money-losing operations we have to run off that we weren't able to complete the sales. We had more regulatory interference than we expected, but we also had people who had indicated expressions of interest to at the end of the day walked away. And there's just no getting around that. So both in South Devon and Northampton, we are almost in a closed-down mode trying to figure out in Northampton getting to a more efficient, smaller operation, transferring some of those operations to other carriers so we can choopy the employees across and give them the appropriate future. So we are having to do some of that, although it is not a big financial item that you would see. As far as the revenue growth in student, well, we do in the plan have, especially in the later years, an assumption that we will see more attractive options in terms of bolt-on acquisitions. We also, you know, this use of best practice actually works, and the best example is what's happened in our third-party charter business. So we really did analyze what the best practices are. We put it together in a package. We trialed it in one location, and then we spread it across the country. So in third-party charter, across North America, our increase in the past year was 21%. Now, charter is about 8% of revenues. Third-party charter is about half of that. So, I mean, it's not, you know, the huge engine of growth, but it's quite significant to change the market that way, and we're going to continue to push that. And we, you know, also are continuing to look to find just more efficient ways to assemble the cascading of services that we do out of particular depots. We have very, very healthy margins in a lot of places, and it's just about trying to spread those conditions in terms of the way you bid going forward. As far as Glasgow, so what happened in Glasgow? So the municipal bus company that first bought was the dominant bus company, right? And if I were to show you a map of Glasgow 10 years ago and its frequencies, you would see like 17 red lines across the city with very high frequencies. As mileage was cut, and if I show you that map from a year ago, it's two red lines. So naturally, you had all this competition flood into the city. A lot of that competition has failed recently under these tougher conditions we've talked about. And we think this is the perfect time to reassert the service that we think can clear those streets and return them to us. And that's why we've put together this whole new network that brings back these high frequencies on the main corridors that will make us the Glasgow bus company that we should be. And we've done this not by just drawing some lines in a room, but a detailed consultation that's been going on in the city. And we think it's this kind of partnership approach that is welcomed by the local authorities and that we think will give us the kind of standing in the community that we're looking for.
Damien Burrough from RBC. A few questions, but maybe I'll try and keep them short. First of all, just you mentioned about evaluating the portfolio. Is that more that we can expect to see some small disposals? How will that evaluation happen? And is that now going to be an ongoing process of day-to-day management in the business? second question, just trying to get comfortable about the amount you're raising, and I suppose there's two questions there. First of all, the 5% fee, it looks like you get 585 out of 615. Could you explain why that looks relatively high? And secondly, although it gets you down to the sort of the 25% level, given this seems to be a level that's important to credit rating agencies, how much comfort have you had from the credit rating agencies that, like we had with West Coast, you got potentially downgraded because of winning it and then downgraded again, potentially for not winning it? So how much comfort have you had in terms of feedback from them that this is a level that they will indeed be comfortable with? And then very finally, on the UK bus side, could you tell us a little bit more, because it hasn't been sort of news recently, on what's happening with the evolution of sort of contactless card technology, smart ticketing, and whether that's in the CapEx plans and whether there's any step up there to push the revenue demand side of the business? Thank you.
Okay, I'll take the first and the last, because I have two in the middle.
Great.
So I quite consciously, obviously, made the point about evaluating the portfolio, because one of the things said about us is, well, geez, you know, you're looking at all these things, but you do it at a position of weakness. So, you know, people are able to, you know, take advantage of the position. And that was certainly something that we were conscious of in the sales of these bus companies, which is why we said we would let sales go past the year end if we had to get a good deal. We will say what we've always said in the past, and that is we will always be reevaluating the company. We will always be looking if there is a better way to return capital to shareholders, if the market should make a transaction attractive. We have no ideological need to hold on to everything. This is about doing what's right. But it's much better to be doing that kind of evaluation because it's right for the shareholders and not because there's a perception that you have no choice. And that's what I was referring to. So we will continue to reevaluate ourselves. This isn't about holding it all together. This is about doing the right thing. As far as UK bus and contactless cards, so the investment I talked about before in putting in the readers, we did. And over the past year, we have delivered on that program, and we've installed them on, 5,000-6,000 buses through England and Wales. Of course, Scotland already had a different reader that was picked by in partnership with the government. So that's in place. Now the big challenge is actually the software work you have to do first to make it possible for all these local ITSO schemes to come forward. And I think we have a queue of something like 29 of them. And it's really a fairly tough assignment, more on the supply side of what you can buy in, just getting people who are able to deliver this work. And we're hard at work at it and expect to run through that in this year. But the bigger issue of figuring out where the future is going to go and whether you have to have your own smart card like a go-ahead or whether you go to a world of EMV like TfL has said, is something we're continuing to work at. And I think our attitude is that we have to hedge our bet. And so we're running pilots with regard to all three to determine which gets the quickest response from the public, and we should move across our business. And to answer your question, is there more of a step up in terms of spend? There is. It is not the dimensions of what we've spent so far to put all the hardware out there, but there is money in the plan to complete that transformation. I'll turn it over to you on fees.
Damien, on your second question, we expect to get 585 or maybe a little north of that in terms of proceeds. We've gone back and looked at the normal rates that are charged on these types of deals, and this is bang in line with those rates. Yes, I agree, it's a big number, but we're bang in line with what is normal. In terms of the rating agencies, yes, we've involved them in the this process, and we've been in discussions with them. So yes, we are very comfortable that this ensures that we maintain our investment grade status.
Thank you.
That's certainly a tough one. You know the rating agencies as well as I do have an ability to change their views. But I think the process that we went through last year was really all about them changing their views on rail. To the extent that I can, I think they have now settled down. So I certainly wouldn't expect them to change it, but clearly I can't give you a guarantee on that.
Edward Stanford from Oriel. Just a question, if I may, turning to, I don't know if you've been rather busy, but rail refranchising or rail franchise extension negotiations. There has been some concern in the industry that this could be a process which maintains the status quo and doesn't perhaps provide you with the commercial opportunities that you might like for a long period or longer period. Could you perhaps give us a flavor of your take on how this will develop? And in terms of the timing of your two extensions, is it going to be a bit like C2C and left to the last minute for an announcement, or how do you see that panning out? And that was it. Thank you.
On the first point, we as an industry talk about this as a big subject of the rail delivery group, this very point that you've raised. It's a critical point. We cannot have an industry that just sits down for a few years. First of all, the demand is so intense, and passengers' expectations keep ratcheting up. We have got to deliver improvements, and it's a point we've made repeatedly and explicitly to the Secretary of State. And we understand the pressures that the government's under, but all of us are up for creative ways of still bringing new capital into this business so we can deliver improvements for the customer. When I think of First Great Western, I mean, you know, we need a bigger boat. That's the bottom line. I mean, we need more trains. And we've made this plain to the government, and they have got to allow this to happen. And the Secretary of State's up for it. I mean, they get it. It's just a question of the pressures they're put under by the Treasury and whether we, working with them, can, in creative ways, bring capital. So I don't mean to be obscure. This is really a simple point. It's all about the government resolving its views on residual value. And if you can have a residual value mechanism, this can go forward pretty simply. And we think we can continue to deliver improvements so people don't have the view that, oh, this industry isn't going anywhere for 3, 4, 5 years. You choose the number. So that's a very, very hot topic for us right now. As far as will there be announcements at the last minute, I don't know. We're in negotiations. You'll notice I was conspicuous. I didn't say anything about them because, you know, what can I say while we're talking to the department? But the one thing that does cause you to raise your eyebrows in this process is forget about the franchising schedule. Negotiating the extensions is a huge piece of work. And so there is an issue about, you know, throughput with the government. And they have, I mean, I'm quite sympathetic to those teams. They have a big, big body of work. So we're in there all the time because we want certainty, and I want to be able to stand here and tell you exactly what the possibilities are on the Great Western and elsewhere. But, you know, it's just going to take a while.
Hello, it's Joe Thomas here from HSBC. Three questions, please. First of all, Chris, could you, having gone through this process, could you sort of give an indication that you are comfortable that all the exceptional costs that were in transit, or at least one-off costs, because you've taken some of them as part of underlying operating profits, have now gone from that business, and indeed that you don't need to make any more provisions for accidents or insurance indemnities in the U.S. I think in the past you've just been running down those provisions as part of your self-insurance. The second thing, Tim, on the U.S. school bus business, could you just give an indication about what your assumptions are on underlying cost inflation? Because presumably wages, health insurance and other costs are going up there. And then finally, on the UK bus side of things, you've talked about the regulatory environment or government doing its bit. Clearly, local government has had a bit of an agenda for quality contracts, and even where they might not be introduced, it feels as though you might be giving up some margin to sort of stave them off. How comfortable can you be that your higher margin businesses will remain as high margin as they have been in the past?
Shall I go first on number one?
Okay.
On exceptionals, I, like most people, don't like putting items to exceptionals unless that it's in the right thing to do in terms of not distorting the underlying numbers. And by that, I mean either a number is very, very large or very, very old. So certainly when you have reshaping businesses, as we've seen this time, they generally result in quite large numbers and so on, so those would go into the exceptional items. But in terms of the second part of your question, which is am I happy with the balance sheet, I mean, the obvious answer to that is we're announcing audited results at the same time today, and we've been through an audit process. But also, just because I'm new, we've been through a very, very specific process of looking at all the different potential claims that are around, which is one of the reasons and the key reason that I put aside the 20 million number that you saw for those very old legal claims associated or around the legal days. So as I sit here, I think the balance sheet is absolutely fine. I think you also raised insurance and the reduction in the insurance provisions. That's actually coming from the actions that we're taking on safety, reducing the levels of accident rates, and that's just driving to lower claims. You saw it in the Greyhound numbers. That's reducing the provision, as well as actually just tidying up some of the old claims, which you will have seen coming through in the cash flow statement.
As far as school bus inflation, we're seeing around 2%, 2% on wage. You know, this is always something that is questioned because we are so highly organized. We have a lot of Teamsters. Rate has not been an issue to date. Not a Pollyanna about this. It's something we always have to watch and manage. It's one of the reasons why we were lucky to recruit Jim Weinstock as a new board member. You know, Jim ran UPS, the largest employer of Teamsters in the United States, very successful company, and it's learning from all that they've done to make sure we have the kind of positive relations going forward, and so far we have enjoyed that. But it's something obviously requires a lot of work, and we'll keep after. As far as local governments and quality contracts, well, you know that it's not just us. Some others have been attacked with the quality contract agenda. And one of the reasons we turned to the North that I talked about earlier is because it is key to our profitability. But it's also where we were hearing the most noise for quality contracts for us. And it's really been what we've pulled off in Sheffield and South Yorkshire with a quality partnership that has produced growth for us and has allowed us to continue the profitability of that sector that we've used to try to turn around the dialogue with West Yorkshire, which was the area that was most adamant on this. And we're very encouraged by the fact that they seem to be up for the continuing development of a quality partnership instead of a quality contract. We think we can work within this structure. We don't actually think it's threatening to us. We think that given that they control half of the delivery mechanism, the street furniture, the priority lanes, and all the rest of it, we think that at the long run, you get higher profitability in partnership with the local community. So, you know, all I can say is so far, so good. West Yorkshire folks are still using, let's say, the possibility as a bargaining item with us, but we are in a much better position than we thought we'd be at this time last year, And I think with the approach we're taking to UK bus, that is putting in the investment, putting in sensitive fare packages that respond to the local community, showing that we're delivering the service efficiently and not trying to just extract things from the community is the real thing that will put this agenda aside.
Hi, it's Alexia Dugan from Liberum. I just had two questions, please, as well. Just firstly, on the 1.6 billion of capital investment over the next 4 years, should we assume it's evenly split? And also, is it all cash or is it some investment through operating leases? And then my second question is on UK bus. And clearly now that you have announced the disposal program, how are you ensuring that the organization is set up for change at the local businesses? And what is the, you know, the feeling and buying from the ground to restructure those local bus companies? Thanks.
As far as the capital program, that is cash. That isn't leases. I mean, obviously, we may explore doing efficient things going forward. But as a guidance now, that is a real commitment in cash. As far as how we're managing the change and that the UK bus doesn't slip back, it does come down to management. We have changed 20% of the management in UK bus in the last year. We are finding great success in recruiting new people coming out of the military. These people have just the skills we're looking for, a lot of people with extensive experience in managing large fleets, and we expect to continue to recruit. We do have a continuing deficit, I would say. We need more management. It isn't about sending a memo from headquarters. Somebody's got to be able to read it and do something about it. And we're acutely aware of that. And it's one of the reasons why we're not trying to do everything everywhere at the same time. Why we're moving through these depots in waves, because at the same time you put in new buses, at the same time you ask to put in new procedures, you've got to make sure you have the management who's there and up for it. And other than that, it's just then your continuing discipline of maintaining the progress you've created.
Alexia, it's broadly 400 million a year. Some, depends on the program. Some years a bit more, some years a bit less.
Morning, Joe Spina from Jefferies. Can you just talk a little bit about how, when you were setting the size of the rights issue, you were thinking about rail? Because as it stands today, still a significant contributor into EBITDA, and you've still got some significant restricted cash balances in that side of the business. And how important is rail? I think you talked about heading in time towards 2x or just above in terms of net debt to EBITDA. How important is rail in the context of that progress?
Okay. Our balance sheet was strong enough to deal with rail anyway before we started this process. So the improvements that we make in strengthening the balance sheet even further just adds to that process. So it's not, in terms of driving the absolute number, then rail is not the key element to
especially
that.
Especially since they deconstruct it.
Pardon?
Especially since they deconstruct it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't really got that point, but because basically when...
It isn't just the EBITDA. Stop. They deconstruct rail in their model. So it's actually less of a driver than that would look to. I think it's the second part of your question is more relevant to rail, because rail is an important part of this company and will be an important part of this company, and our ability to support payout over time, that is an important component.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, morning, guys. It's Anand from Deutsche Bank. Just on those 400 million sterling a year, you've talked about First Student $150 million, Transit $40 million, Greyhound about $100 million. Is it fair then that UK Bus will be the balance? And then in terms of the different divisions, could you give any indication of, after you spend CapEx, when we actually start to see fleet age come down, or when we start to see hard numbers coming on the back of that CapEx? Thanks.
Okay, I think I did you a disservice in throwing some numbers around that confuse things. So the $150 million I mentioned for student, that was the annual figure. The amount I talked about in shuttle, 40, it's actually more like 50, was the amount over the plan period. Remember I said that I think that, you know, you're going to have, you know, 15, 17 million of growth in the shuttle per year going forward that we see. So I think the way to think of our capital program is this. If you take the 400 million, our depreciation level is like 265, 270 on just the bus fleet. So X rail. So put rail aside, because you often finance that capital out of the premium line in your bid. That's how you do it. So multiply that times 1.2 times, say, and you get in the 315, 320 range, somewhere like that. Okay. We've said to you that the bus age in UK bus has to come down. And I think last year I talked about we were at, you know, 8.5, we wanted to get down into the 7s. But given we've sold off London and that's a lot of our newest buses, we're more like 9s, got to get down into the 8s. And that's what this program does. So there is an increment of 25 million per year or so that additionally has to go into UK bus to drive that down. Remember we said last year we're going to hold the investment in UK bus steady even though it's a smaller business in order to free up that money. The balance is the additional buses we're going to be putting into Greyhound to exploit the growth of some of these opportunities that I talked about, as well as our move into Mexico. We're the first certificated U.S. carrier that can now move bus service into Mexico, and that's going to be an exciting opportunity. And it's also in this IT area. So we talked about the smart ticketing, talked about this big transformation project in Greyhound, and that's primarily where the money goes. So I would say, so what does that mean? So at the end of this program, if our company were to maintain a profile like this, a normalized, non-inflated, you know, normalized run rate is going to be like in a 350 range. So I would expect that this capital program is about 50 million pounds heavy through this planned period in order to make up this deficit, in order to give us the firepower to see some of these commercial opportunities.
Yeah, 50 million per annum.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry. So 200 million over this amount.
Sorry, it's Alex Brunner from UBS again. Just one more question, if I may. Just regarding bid costs, given how important you've talked about rail within the dividend and ongoing and looking for new contracts, how can you justify, to be fair, to have bid costs within exceptional items for this year and presumably going forward? Thank you.
Well, this is, of course, a long-standing issue, you know, and you know, I use the past as an excuse in some respects, but I actually appreciate the logic of it because they are such large sums and they are so infrequent. That they are an exceptional item. Where we have bid costs where it's an ongoing business requirement, such as in transit or such as in student, it's, you know, it isn't an exceptional. And that has been the practice. It's one that others have embraced, and it's a debate I expect we'll continue to have in the future. But, I mean, that's the logic of it.
Hi there, Mark here from Merrill's. I'm trying to tally everything up here. I guess in terms of sensitivity, given the restrictions, so far I've got here 15 million of interest savings, capex of 400 million or so going forward, and then disposals largely on ice. We talked about the pension. You've talked about the maturity of the rail contracts and the working capital risk there, and also the risks that you highlighted in UK bus and school bus. So UK bus, obviously the old buses and budgets that you mentioned, as well as Obamacare and high level of unionization in school bus. So tallying all that up, to what degree do you think that the net cash generation, just running your numbers, would remain negative for the next 3 to 5 years? And if indeed it isn't positive, what's in the business plan?
Well, as I've said previously, we expect the cash flow, certainly in the near term, to be broadly neutral. And mainly because we're investing, as Tim has just explained, at a higher rate. We've got some of the catch-ups and so on. And then obviously as the business performance improves and the EBITDA improves over time, then we'll move more into a cash-generating mode. Clearly, as you get towards the end of the planning phase as well, then you're going to have the impacts of the franchises. Hopefully, we'll be winning them, and that will lead to cash inflows at that stage. But, yeah, very, very happy to go into more detail if you want, but I think I'll probably bore to tears everybody here. But basically, it will be flat over the next year or so. Yes, sorry, then turning cash generative.
During
in
the
long
period
term.
Of the plan.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah.
Joel Koo from Espirito Santo. I suppose one question with three topics. Why now and not before? For the rights issue, Greyhound's yield management on the core, and also the expansion of shuttle operations in transit.
For all three of those?
Yeah, so why now and not before for all three of those topics?
On the rights issue?
Rights issue, Greyhound's core business, yield management, because that's something that's been talked about a lot a long time ago.
Right.
And also the expansion of shuttle operations in transit.
Why now on the rights issue? Because we wanted to see if we could do, we would have preferred to do this operationally. I would prefer not to force this issue on my shareholders. This is a sacrifice on their part. We recognize that. And the approach that I pursued, and that's why I explained it in my introduction the way I did, was to do this operationally, if it were at all possible, if we hadn't faced the change that we did and just had to face up to. So that's why that rights issue was not pursued before. As far as the Greyhound, it's been talked about, but it's been a very complex assignment. Number one, we had to get control and stabilize this old trip system, which is the heart of the whole thing. This is a very old system that was maintained in a computer language that isn't even used any longer. And buying out the guy who had an interest in it along with Greyhound and then converting it into a system that now can be matched up with a modern yield management system was a huge project and one we're only now ready to move into the next stage. But in any event, through this time, we have been learning the lessons of Greyhound Express and in Bolt Bus and learning really how to do it well. And finally, why the development of shuttle now and not before? Well, we have been developing our shuttle business. Our shuttle business was tiny in the past. It's 20% of the portfolio. It's just that it's growing. What we're finding, especially in places like the Ivy League, that as soon as Yale went and bought our service, now Brown's buying our service, and the others, as soon as the University of Texas bought our service, now the University of Alabama had to buy our services. You know, it just grows and grows and grows as these people imitate each other. And goodness knows, if you look at what's happened in the oil sands fields in Canada, that's an opportunity that's just exploded. You know what's happened to energy in North America. So why now? Because the market is now.
Thank you. Just two further ones, please. First of all, one bigger one. In terms of the new chairman, are there any specific qualities or industry experience you'll be looking for as a board? And could you share them with us? Will you be looking for someone from within industry or who's got a sort of wider outside expertise? And then secondly, just on the tax, again, I think it's about $6 million tax paid for the year. How much of that reflects loss offset in the business? And how much of that reflects effectively the impact of things like capital allowances, which would probably accelerate as the CapEx picks up? So in other words, tax is low, why, and how long does it stay low for in terms of tax paid rather than ETR?
I don't have anything meaningful to say about the future chairman. Obviously, we'll be working the board, and the current chairman will be working to find the best candidate available, and that program will unfold over time. I'll turn the tax over to Chris.
Yeah, Damien, the tax rate is around 20% at the moment. We've got significant losses that we've brought forward from previous years, particularly in the U.S., and obviously with a relatively high interest structure. We would expect tax to remain at broadly the same rate for the near term. Also in terms of cash being relatively low as well, yes. And as you're right, the capital allowance situation certainly helps us as well.
Hi, it's Anandek from Deutsche Bank. Just one more. We've had a couple of companies restructuring in the sector. Is there any reason why you haven't given a target, say, for the medium term about where you would like the group P&L to get to, maybe even X-Rail? Is that something you considered? Thanks.
Well, I think we've given some fairly, I hope, clear targets and where we've said that the margins on the bus businesses will get to and the overall return on capital. So I think that there are clear targets there. We've chosen to do it in that way because we've got a whole range of different businesses rather than just one specific target on a particular margin.
Thanks, Gerald Koo from Espirito Santo again. Just a couple of quick questions. You referred, I think, in the context of Greyhound, a change in the Canadian regulatory situation. Could you perhaps elaborate a bit more on that? And I think there was also reference to London bus profit on disposal. Are you happy to share a number with us on that? When presumably it's already done, assuming the deal happens.
As you know, the Canadian business has been a regulated business. Which is why Canada didn't have the flexible cost structure that they were able to put in the United States. Unfortunately, the Canadian government punted this to the provinces to deal with, and so we've had to work our way across province by province, and it's been an excruciating process. And the kind of keystone for completing the transformation has been British Columbia, and they've just finally agreed to allow us to make the kinds of changes that will allow us to strip out a lot of miles and bring it down to a, we would hope, profitable enterprise going forward. But there's no two ways about it. The Canadian assignment's much tougher than the U.S. because the density and the miles involved. I mean, it's just a tough assignment up there. They've reduced the regulation to allow us to be able to cut. I mean, basically what we went to them was say, look, the math doesn't work. So you have two choices. You can either give us subsidies, which some provinces have done, or you've got to let us cut the mileage and put in a service that the commercial market will support. And it's been that negotiation that has gone on back and forth. But there is still some regulation. Now, at the exact same time, we've decided to bring the new products to Canada. So in Western Canada, we have rolled out Greyhound Express, which is not regulated and has been very well received in the lanes we've put it in. I'll let you answer the other one. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, on the profit on disposal of London, it will be between 15 and 20 million, and that will make the overall number, when you take account of the asset write-down, broadly flat.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us this morning. I do regret that it was on such short notice, so we appreciate the change you've made in your schedules.
That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.